Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Bob Tart's book, Kitty Cornered, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We begin today's readings with Bob Tart, Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. Previously, we learned that Lucy had turned out to be quite the sourpuss who had no interest in using a litter box, but Bob could not consider returning her to her previous pet owner, Dave. And now we continue our reading. Christmas was long gone by now, as far as the past as dry hallway linoleum, and I knew I wouldn't find a carton of wrapping paper at the store. Even if I did, I'd end up gift wrapping Lucy and plopping her onto a stranger's porch. The thing to do instead was grab the widest, longest utility tub available, long enough for Mooby to hop into, but high enough to safely wall in Lucy. I reached the conclusion while sitting on the floor with my back pressed against Lucy's chair. Some cats that balked at being petted still enjoyed human company, so I was treating her to mine. 3 minutes ought to be enough, I estimated. After less than 20 seconds, I realized that I was leaning unprotected flesh in the proximity of her mouth, and boy, was I concerned. I scrunched around sideways to find her studying me. I had clearly moved just in time. We glared at each other for a while. I didn't feel the love, but I wasn't giving up. I began babbling about what a good, good girl she was, and now I had never seen anything more attractive than her gray foot with the cream-colored stripe across one fat toe. She wasn't having anything. She clunked down to the floor and headed for Mooby's kibbles as Linda walked in from the outdoors. I'm sick of being in this house, she said. I thought of pointing out the irony of her statement. I hate this house, she said, in case I had missed the point the first time. It wasn't the house that she hated as much as a winter that refused to throw in the shovel in late March. How could a woman whose lifeblood came from the sun-warm Tennessee hills be expected to put up with it? Her relatives in Hanging Limb were, at that moment, filling their lungs with the scent of flowering trees as bumblebees bumped along unmowed lawns and Nashville warblers twittered from spirea branches. While the frigid temperatures barely fazed her, the clouds drove her nuts. It could be 0 degrees Kelvin outdoors, but as long as the sun shone, Linda's mood stayed bright. But a Michigan winter could go weeks without revealing a patch of blue sky. As Linda yanked off her leaky boots, Lucy defied gravity and vaulted up onto the entertainment center. She wasn't athletic. She seemed more mineral than mammal. So to witness her leaping to the top of a 3-foot-tall structure in a single bound made me realize anything was possible. It brought to mind the old adage, when pigs fly. Lying on her side, she displayed a light brown stomach that was so large it looked as if a second cat was nestling against her. Why don't you come to the store with me, I said. The produce section is lovely this time of year. You could buy more carrots. 2 nights earlier, I had asked at dinner, are these carrots all right? They're sort of whitish. They were getting too old for the bunnies, so I thought we'd better eat them. I had struggled with her logic as I examined my potatoes. The carrots aren't good enough for your rabbits, but they're good enough for your husband. What about my water? Did it come from Mooby's bowl? Recalling the carrots didn't improve Linda's mood. I've got them on my list. Lucy hopped down from the entertainment center, this time using my hi-fi speaker as a stepping stone and sending it crashing into the wall. So much for high fidelity. The anticipation of afternoon duck chores may have amplified Linda's glumness. We suffered more from the cold weather exposure than the mailman, the newspaper carrier, and rose bushes combined. When we weren't shipping ice out of waiting bowls and dragging a hose outdoor to refill them, we were knocking icicles off sagging pen-top netting and struggling to free barn doors from the grip of the frozen ground. While I despised exertion of any description, Linda loved working outdoors in the sunshine. Her favorite job was tending her countless gardens. Worsening back problems had forced her to tinker in them by proxy. She hired helpers for the down and dirty work, but she pulled her weight not only by directing each step of the process, but also by maintaining a steady stream of chatter. Keeping the conversation going with Linda was nearly as important to the job as horticultural savvy, and woe unto the helper who lacked the jaw muscles to keep up. I knew that gardening would improve her state of mind, but it was way too early to think about gardens yet, even if I was ready to pitch Lucy out into last year's rhubarb. I drove to the store up the street, parked my car, avoided greeting the greeter, threaded through ladies' undies, and arrived in the whereabouts of Housewares, barely realizing that I had made the journey. I had moved on from my preoccupation with Lucy to obsessing about Linda. When bad things happened, such as an illness or a pet injury, she rarely lost her head, while I rarely got out of mine. She was my rock, my support, my rock collector, my knick-knack hoarder, my tofu braiser, my pet pamperer, and I couldn't stand seeing her upset. Although I couldn't bring out the sun for her, I could bring home a better litter box. I owed it to her. At least I owed it to the floor. In the utility tub section, I discovered a daunting variety of tub widths, heights, and depths. I needed to set one in the aisle and walk around it in an approximate Lucy frame of mind, while staying upright to avoid arrest. But my access to the tubs was thwarted. The aisle blockers were out in full force. There were members of the secret organization whose mission was keeping shoppers away from the items they wanted to buy. Usually the aisle blockers operated alone. Sometimes they worked in pairs. Once during holidays, I had witnessed a phalanx of five masterfully clogging up the store entrance. In front of the tubs, two carts walled off the litter box size containers. Next to the carts, two women stood chatting, completing their barricade. "Excuse me," I said, taking a step toward the tubs, but the aisle blockers didn't even glance at me. "I just need to get over here, only for a second." Failing to get a response, I touched one of the carts, hoping to roll it backward ever so slightly. Without interrupting her monologue, the aisle blocker hooked her fingers onto the cart, preventing me from budging it. I trudged off to the pet department and spent several moments gazing longingly at the covered litter boxes, which Dave had assured me Lucy would never use. Even though she would rarely and readily enter a brown paper bag that he would leave out for her on the floor. The privacy of a covered toilet was out of the question. It probably was just as well. Even the largest model appeared too compact for Lucy's generous proportions. By the time I returned to Housewares, the aisle blockers had rolled off in search of fresh prey. I picked out a roomy utility tub with shallow sides and decided to bring home a toy for Lucy. A fishing pole. Type gizmo with a springy wire looking promising until I noticed that the lure at the end consisted of two large feathers. Training Lucy to attack a bird-like object when we had several examples of the real thing in our dining room just felt like a bad idea. I chose a pickle-sized catnip-filled stuffed mouse instead and was about to toss it into the shopping cart when I made a closer inspection of the rodent's attractive brown and black streaked fur. It looked a little too much like a rabbit. Rudy's coat, because it was made from rabbit fur, I searched for an alternative hoping I didn't run into a toy shaped like my hand. I found a wooden stick with a small plush squid at the end and stood quietly for a minute, taking inventory of our pets. Nope, no squid. This one was definitely safe. Even better, it was downright attractive. The fuzzy tentacles tickled the hair on my arm and sent pleasant chills throbbing through my body when I dangled it against my skin. I couldn't keep my fingers off of it, and I hoped that security cameras weren't focusing on me. I had to have it. I plucked a rabbit fur-free mousie off the shelf so that Lucy would have something to play with, too. I bumped through the front door with the utility tub, hoping that the new litter box would improve Linda's mood. I heard squeals emanating from her study. "Sweetie, one of my pen pals sent me a flyer from a nursery. They've got every type of tree I've ever wanted, and they're not even expensive." I knew this to be a relative term, but next to the photo of a tiny humanoid, presumably named Smithy, who was dwarfed by the monstrously spreading chestnut tree, a diminutive price beckoned. You can hardly buy a flat of impatience for that. And they've got hydrangeas, peach trees, cherry trees, flowering dogwoods. Good, 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 I nodded to a litany of plant trees, shrubs, grateful for the change in the indoor climate, as I backed out of the room. "And listen to this," she said, while I was still within earshot. "They're located in Tennessee. They might know some of my relatives. I can't wait to call and talk to them." While I was happy that she had scored a shot of artificial sunlight, I wondered where she would possibly plant any of it. Thanks to our proximity to the river, 2/3 of our property was underwater each spring, so that only left the mowed confines of the yard. I was fine with walling us away for the rest of the world, but I still hoped to be able to walk out to my car without having to hack through the foliage. I replaced Lucy's litter box with the brand new tub. Then I freed the mousy toy from the protective packaging and, with a look of wild excitement on my face, vigorously shook the toy a few inches from Lucy's head. "What's this?" I asked her. "What's this?" She lifted her head up. "Get it," I hollered. "Get that thing," and flung it across the room so that it clattered against the opposite wall. I had succeeded in capturing her interest, but it wasn't the mouse that fascinated her. The manner in which she stared at me suggested that in all of her years living with Dave and in a few months with us, she had never witnessed any behavior so absolutely and utterly foolish. Nothing even close. I gave her the toy, a half-hearted try, bouncing it up and down and dangling the tentacles in front of her. I pretended to be undaunted by her rejection, but I wasn't squiddling her any more. Well, Dave is definitely in a pickle with Lucy, and I guess we're going to have to wait till next week to find out just exactly what happens between the two of them in Bob Tart's book, Kitty Cornered, How Franny and Five Other Incorrigible Cats Seized Control of Our House and Made It Their Home. Our next reading comes from Best Friends, the November-December 2025 edition of the magazine, which is the magazine for the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. This is called The Fabric of Family Volunteers. Chester the pig arrived at the sanctuary wanting nothing to do with people, but volunteer Janine Courtney Clark made it her mission to change his mind. For months, she simply sat nearby until he began to trust her. "I cried the first time I touched him," she says. "Now he lets other people pet him, too." Chester is one of the many animals Janine and her husband Don have helped at the sanctuary. Between the two of them, they dedicated 6 full days a week to the volunteering experience. Janine works with pigs, Don works with horses, and together they've woven themselves into the fabric of family at the sanctuary. Their journey began in 2016 when they were living in Florida and visited the sanctuary while vacationing. "We absolutely fell in love," says Janine. "It was the combination of the beauty of the sanctuary and the care of the animals." By 2018, they'd moved to Kanab, Utah, to spend their retirement years helping the animals who had stolen their hearts. Janine quickly found her home in Marshall's Piggy Paradise, the area of the sanctuary where the pigs and goats reside. "I was hooked," she says. "Pigs are smart, they're sensitive, they're funny, they're just incredible beings." Janine has a particular knack for working with shy pigs like Chester, and the more time she spends with pigs, the more impressed she is by their intelligence. Molly eats her lettuce in a separate area up on a hill, otherwise the others would steal it from her, recalls Janine. "One day I watched her eat half her lettuce, leave it, sneak down the hill to grab some of her friend's lettuce, then come back up and finish her own. She had it all figured out." Meanwhile, Don found his place with the horses, assisting with training, feeding, and helping them get comfortable walking into trailers. He also is the handyman, fixing everything from fences to water systems. Horse Haven supervisor Christy Gerard says, "They are very important parts of the Horse Haven and Piggy Paradise family, and much of the reason we can do the things that we do. We started as a vacation side trip, and it has turned into a life filled with piggy belly rubs, fence repairs, and even the occasional lettuce heist. It's not just a place we volunteer. It's our home," Janine says. This article, Volunteers, the Fabric of Family. The next article is from Dogtown, and it's called Comfortable in His Skin. To say Bowie wasn't comfortable in his own skin when he arrived at the sanctuary would be an understatement. His skin was inflamed and his fur was patchy. He spent most of the time curled up in a ball, too uncomfortable to do much else. He didn't wag his tail, and he didn't play. He just looked miserable, says Debbie Carmen, who welcomed Bowie into her home as a foster pet just a few days after his arrival. He barely moved. He had this dull look in his eyes, but things were about to turn around. At first, it looked like Bowie had a straightforward case of mange, a common skin disease caused by mites. The usual treatment didn't help. So, best friend's veterinarian looked deeper. Eventually, they discovered that Bowie has something much rarer, pemphigus, an autoimmune disease that can cause itchy and inflamed skin, crusting around the face and ears, and painful flare-ups if left untreated. The diagnosis changed everything. With the right combination of medication and lots of care, Bowie began to heal. Debbie made sure he got what he needed, from soothing baths every other day to carefully balanced meals. He was so skinny at first. Even with a huge appetite, he couldn't keep weight on. But once we got the right treatment, he started to feel better. He started gaining weight, and he started to come alive. One day, seemingly out of nowhere, Bowie picked up a toy and began to play. It was like a switch flipped, says Debbie. He suddenly had energy. He started following the other dogs around the yard, exploring and playing tug, like he realized, oh, I can do this now. Bowie still has some skin sensitivity and requires a bit of extra care, regular vet checkups, and medication to keep his condition under control. But his fur is growing back, and he's thriving. He smiles all the time, says Debbie. He's just the sweetest guy, so friendly and so happy. This is the dog he's supposed to be. It took the right veterinary care and a whole lot of TLC, but today Bowie is healthy, happy, and at home in his own skin. The article, Dogtown, Comfortable in His Skin. Continuing from Dogtown, he doesn't snore. When senior pup Coda went on a sleepover with a young girl named Autumn and her family, he didn't know he would inspire both art and poetry. Autumn drew his portrait and penned a charming list of reasons to adopt him, from he doesn't snore to he's the right amount of cuddles. Sounds like the perfect gentleman. And then there's the cat world, and the article, Leap of Faith Leads to Love. For most of her time at Cat World, Kenobi was more of a whisperer than a presence. The kind of cat you see out of the corner of your eye, tucked high on a perch, she watched the world from above, quiet and cautious. She arrived with more than a dozen other cats from a shelter in Arizona. While many were adopted quickly, it took Kenobi more time to feel safe and show her true self to potential adopters. One day, something shifted, and Kenobi came down from her perch to eat. Soon, she was waiting at the door when she knew her bowl was coming. Eventually, she started greeting caregivers, hesitant but curious. She was still shy, still selective, but something was changing. Around the same time, Sean Hill and his son Avery were visiting the sanctuary looking for a cat to adopt for Avery's birthday. They met lots of sweet cats, but they didn't like them right away. And then, Sean says, Kenobi came right up to Avery and just kept circling around his legs. He fell in love pretty fast. That kind of boldness was unheard of for Kenobi, but for reasons known only to her, she was just as drawn to Avery as he was to her. They took her home that same day, and since then Kenobi has made herself very much at home. If we're on the couch, she'll come up and curl in our lap, says Sean. She cuddles and sleeps on the bed and all day long. We've earned her trust, and in turn, they've gained a cat who picked them when the moment was correct and the person was correct. She loves being part of our family, Sean says, and the feeling clearly is mutual. Turning now to some questions in the column, Dear Holly. Our three-year-old Potcake, Rush, has slept in and loved his kennel ever since we brought him home from Big Dog Ranch in Florida. It was his refuge during storms and fireworks. He wouldn't go in and out of the kennel during the day. About a week ago, we took him to his kennel so he could go in for the night. He was reluctant to go in, but he did, and we closed the door as we always do. Within a few minutes, Rush started whimpering and whining as though he was incredibly frightened, so we opened the door and let him out. Ever since then, he won't set foot in the kennel. Any ideas what might have happened to cause this turnaround? Signed, Puzzled About Our Potcake. Dear Puzzle, Rush's reaction is certainly puzzling, especially since his kennel has been a safe space for him. Perhaps he had a negative experience in the kennel of which you are unaware, like a bug bite or a sting, or maybe his fur or paw got caught in the kennel somehow and caused him pain. You could attempt to reacclimate him by giving him treats near the kennel and eventually putting treats in the kennel to entice him to go in, leaving the door open. Make the crate extra cozy by adding a soft blanket or bed. You could also try moving the crate to a new position in case it's the location of the crate that bothers him. I recommend that you avoid closing the door until you are confident he is no longer fearful. If that strategy fails, consider creating a different secure area for Rush using a playpen, a tent, or a baby gate that allows him to have an entire room as a safe place. If you don't need to contain him, you could simply set him up with a fort, such as a card table draped with a blanket and outfitted with a comfy bed and his favorite toys. P.S. For readers who aren't aware, a potcake dog is a mixed breed originating from the Caribbean islands. The term potcake refers to a traditional local dish of seasoned rice and pigeon peas. The overcooked rice that sticks to the bottom of the cooking pot is mixed with leftovers and fed to stray dogs by Good Samaritans. Dear Holly, our cat Dusty is really playful, but he also really likes to bite. Dusty is about 11 months old, and we rescued him from a very bad situation when he was 4 months old. I love him so much and couldn't imagine life without him, but whenever we pick him up or try to play with him, he bites us. The weird part? Whenever he bites us, he licks us afterwards. I would appreciate any suggestions regarding what we could do about Dusty's habit. Dear Baffled, I'm sorry your kitty has such a rough start in life. My first suggestion is to adopt another cat, about the same age or a bit older than Dusty, with whom Dusty can roughhouse. Maybe you could try fostering another cat first, to ensure that Dusty and his new playmate are a good fit. Go to bestfriends.org/resources and search for introducing cats to each other to learn how to make the initial introduction. Here are some other suggestions. When kittens play together, they often mix biting with licking. It's an instinctive blend of playing and grooming that's part of their social bonding. If Dusty bites you, mimic what a mom cat or sibling would do when he bites too hard. Let out a high-pitched, "Ow!" Then put Dusty down and immediately give him something more appropriate to chew on, like a stuffed animal or a sock filled with cotton balls. Make sure that you never use your hands as playthings when you're interacting with Dusty. Always use a toy instead. Provide him with a window perch, cat tree, and scratching surfaces so he can explore, jump, and run. And finally, use a variety of interactive toys to play with Dusty. Automatic interactive cat toys are fantastic for solo play, but I found that combining them with the toys designed for human-cat interaction, like the ever-popular Cat Dancer, can be especially effective in providing the level of exercise that teenage cats need. When used daily, they can really help to curb biting behavior. This helpful information all comes from Holly in the magazine Best Friends, the November-December 2025 edition. Their slogan, "Together we can save them all." The magazine from the Best Friends Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. Our next article is from the Arizona Humane Society magazine, Paw Prints, Fall 2025 edition. Jerry's Law, now saving pets across Arizona. It's official. SB 1658, a groundbreaking animal anti-cruelty bill, is now law in Arizona. This transformative legislation will save thousands of companion animals each year, giving local police the tools to act quickly in extreme cruelty cases by enabling them to obtain faster search warrants. SB 1658 was named Jerry's Law in honor of Jerry, a survivor of Chandler 55, which remains one of the most egregious animal cruelty cases our organization has ever seen. The momentous achievement isn't possible without the tireless efforts of Arizona Senator Shauna Bolick. Her unwavering commitment to animal welfare and leadership in pushing this bill forward has made our state a safer place for vulnerable pets. We are deeply grateful for her advocacy, vision, and persistence in making this law a reality. While the victory is historic, the work has just begun. The Arizona Humane Society will now focus on working together with local police departments to ensure the law is enforced and that every community across our state understands and upholds these new standards of care. In addition to SB 1658, the Arizona Humane Society worked diligently to pass a critical new law that increases the bond amount for seized animals from $25 to $500. This bond helps cover the cost of care for animals removed due to cruelty or neglect, now better reflects the actual expenses involved and encourages owners to take their responsibilities seriously. By aligning the bond with real-world care costs, we can better protect vulnerable animals, standardize how cruelty cases are handled statewide, and build a greater public confidence in the legal process. This important advancement would not have been possible without the leadership and commitment of Senator John Kavanaugh, his advocacy for the instrument in championing the rights of animals and pushing the legislation forward, which helps ensure a safer, more compassionate Arizona for pets in need. These laws appeared in the magazine by the Arizona Humane Society. The magazine is called Paw Prints. It's the fall 2025 edition. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Be happy. Stay healthy. Bye-bye.